Good afternoon, everyone. I had hoped against hope that I would not have to have this particular press conference in which I am going to cancel some regular season games. The clubs and our owners fully understand just how important it is to our millions of fans that we get the game on the field as soon as possible. To that end, we want a bargain and we want an agreement with the Players Association as quickly as possible.
That is the Commissioner of Major League Baseball, Rob Manfred, announcing that both opening day and the first 90 games of the regular season in total are all getting wiped off the calendar, extending this lockout and infuriating the players in ways that we have very seldom seen. So today, a sleepless Jeff Passan takes us inside how negotiations even got to this point, who is actually at fault, and what it might take for the national pastime to be saved. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Thursday, March 3rd. This is ESPN Daily. So, Jeff Passan, before we get into the actual, meat of this conversation, I feel like I need to perform a wellness check on you. How are you doing? When was the last time you slept?
I slept 1 hour last night.
Do I look like it?
Jeff, I mean, that simultaneously feels medically dangerous.
Yes.
Verging on the definition of insanity, as you were wont to do. And also, somehow, even more than I thought. You have been working nonstop in a way that is just unsettling to me at this point.
Yeah, I would say unsettling is probably the right word. If I had slept more than 1 hour, I probably could have come up with a better word for it.
Jeff, as always, I regard you as powered by just an intense devotion to journalism and also Diet Mountain Dew.
Got a 12er in the fridge, my friend.
So, Jeff, I want to reset here for people because you, in all of your caffeinated twitchiness, have called Tuesday baseball's darkest day this century. What made it that way? Why does that description feel warranted?
The description is warranted, Pablo, because this was the almost inevitable conclusion to all of the nastiness that has percolated around baseball for really the last decade, coming to a head in one perfect fell swoop. You look at all of the things that have gone wrong across the sport. You look at tanking. You look at the manipulation of service time. You look at the fact that owners are reaping in record profits as well as record revenues, and that player salaries are going down. You look at an ownership class that sees players not as the game, but as just mere employees who are fungible. You look at all of these things, and then you have a commissioner in Rob Manfred who has presided over the entire thing and is so deeply loathed, so incredibly despised by the rank and file. And to have him stand up in front of assembled media in Jupiter, Florida, and say, "I'm canceling opening day," was really the perfect denouement for this entire sham of an offseason where baseball had an opportunity to get a collective bargaining agreement and instead is on the precipice of something that we haven't seen in 25 years.
So that rhetorical denouement, that had a little bit of a body language prelude, Jeff, because on the way to announcing that opening day is gone, the first two series of the regular season are gone, that's March 31st through April 6th, a grand total of around 90 regular season games, Rob Manfred got to the podium.
"We worked hard to avoid an outcome that's bad for our fans, bad for our players, and bad for our clubs. I want to assure our fans that our failure to reach an agreement was not due to a lack of effort by either party.
And how would you describe just how he was looking and projecting?
He smiled. And I try to have sympathy for people in awkward situations who may not know where their facial muscles are going. And I'm saying this in all seriousness. I'm saying this as somebody who talks out of the side of his mouth, and I don't blink when I'm on TV. I don't know if you've ever noticed that, but if I blink, this is true. If I blink in my head, I'm saying, blink, mannequin, blink. Because I know that when I don't tell myself to blink, I don't blink when I'm on TV. So
I feel you. Yeah.
Rob Manfred, who has shown many things over the course of his career. He has shown himself to be an incredibly capable labor lawyer. He has shown himself to be dogged in his pursuit of performance-enhancing drug users. And he has shown himself to be a commissioner who miraculously, I believe, has usurped Roger Goodell on the commissioner's people hate list. And
yes.
And it depends. I don't know, but Bettman's feeling heat, man.
Well, Jeff, I mean, just the degree to which Rob Manfred is like having to deal with his own stars, his own players, publicly criticize him simultaneous to his rhetoric as he is out there at a podium. I mean, it just leads me to wonder, like, how much of this is a strategy by Major League Baseball? How much is Rob Manfred belonging to the rodeo clown school of commissionership, where it's sort of like, hey, pay attention to the clown, get mad at him, and don't get quite so focused on the owners who are just trying to take you for a ride?
That is one well-paid clown. And it's interesting, Pablo, because I say all of these things that Rob Manfred does well because it's abundantly clear that one thing he does not do well is public speaking. And we've seen this in an interview with Carl Ravitch.
I'm not buying into your number of 48. The most important thing is that we play Major League Baseball in 2020, and I can tell you unequivocally we are going to play Major League Baseball this year.
I'll be honest, my number would be 60 to 70 games, and you pay a full prorated salary, and we get back to the game of baseball. Why wouldn't that be acceptable?
You know, Carl, I'm not going to get into bargaining with you about issues with the Players Association. We'll make another proposal to them that's consistent with the economic realities that we're looking at.
And we've seen this when he's standing up in front of us during the lockout, and he's asked by Hannah Kaiser, is owning a baseball team a good investment? And goes on to talk about how investing in the stock market actually provides better returns than an entity over which I am in charge of 30, all of which are worth at least $1 billion, many of which are worth multiple billions of dollars, and one of which in the New York Yankees, if it went out on the market, would probably be worth $8 to $10 billion. Rob Manfred has a credibility problem with the public, and that's what makes this lockout so fascinating, Pablo. It's the changing dynamics that we've seen from 1994 to now. While there was both siding back in 1994 and everybody hated the players for going on strike and everybody hated the owners for baseball, mostly the grievances were trained on the players.
Yes.
That's changed. And certainly there are people now who look at the players and say, you make tons of money, you're playing a kid's game, blah, blah, blah. You know, the classic rhetoric of the aggrieved former athlete, of Uncle Rico getting angry at what he couldn't be.
How much you want to make a bet I can throw a football over them mountains? Yeah, if coach would have put me in fourth quarter, we'd have been state champions, no doubt.
Yes, allow me to throw that football over them mountains for a quarter of what you guys are asking for.
But I think Rob Manfred has been a coalescing force on the opposite side. And his representation of the billionaire class has frankly been awful.
Well, Jeff, after this break, I want to know what the players did in response to that awfulness and how we ended up here.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
The coalescing of the Players Association, Jeff, is stark in all of this. And what did they say? What alarms did they sound as Rob Manfred is smiling and kind of awkwardly laughing and then pronouncing what you just described?
They're just really angry right now. And it's anger blended with sadness, coupled with frustration. But beyond that, there's this burbling thing beneath the surface, Pablo, where the players are starting to feel themselves. They're starting to understand what unity and solidarity actually mean. I think that something happened over the last 5 years, and you could sense it, but there was no real inciting event until 2020. COVID hits, baseball shut down, the union and the league agree in March to a plan to try and reopen baseball when it's appropriate. And when they tried to do that, the first thing Major League Baseball did was say, you're going to take a pay cut. And at the time, people around America were taking pay cuts. Players didn't want to take a pay cut. They didn't want to take a pay cut because they felt like the truth was on their side. And the truth, the whole truth, not just in baseball, but in all of sports, Pablo, is that the players are the game. If you take the players away from the game is not the same. And I think once they saw that Major League Baseball was not treating them like the valuable piece of the game that they are, that it started bringing up old feelings. It started bringing up the Chris Bryant grievance.
Well, explain the Chris Bryant grievance for those who are not familiar.
So to reach free agency in Major League Baseball, you need 6 full years of service time in the major leagues. To get a full year of service, you need to spend 172 out of the 186 days on the baseball calendar on the major league roster.
So 172 is this magic number.
172 is a magic number. And when we talk about service time manipulation, what teams have realized is that if you bring a guy up a month into the season, he's not getting that 172. So instead of the 6-year reserve, it really turns into the 6 5/6 reserve. Or in the case of Chris Bryant, it turns into the 6 171 172nd reserve. because Chris Bryant was brought up the day by the Chicago Cubs after he would have had a full year of service. And he grieved this, went to an arbitrator, and the arbitrator said, even if the Chicago Cubs are not operating by the spirit of the law, they are operating by its letter. And because of that, you are not granted that extra day and thus that extra year of service. And the result of that case, that sticks with players these days. It sticks with players, Pablo, like Rob Manfred calling the commissioner's trophy a piece of metal. It sticks with players.
In an effort to make a rhetorical point, I referred to the World Series trophy in a disrespectful way. And I want to apologize for that. There's no excuse for it. I made a mistake.
It sticks with players like the knowledge that Major League Baseball in arbitration, which is what you get paid after your third year, you can argue on behalf of your salary. And if you can't agree with the team on the salary number, then you get to go to a hearing and you get to, it's a winner takes all hearing. An arbitration panel decides either the club's number that they've submitted is right or the number that you've submitted is right.
Right. Some third party is ruling in the interests of fairness who is right in that conflict.
And because of the random nature of the arbitration room, teams like settling beforehand. And teams don't just like settling. They like settling for the lowest number possible. And nobody loves a lower number more than Major League Baseball because all arbitration cases are funneled through the commissioner's office. They take great pride in going up against the Major League Baseball Players Association and saying, we're going to beat you in arbitration. They take so much pride that they used to, at the winter meetings every year, hand out a replica championship belt to the organization that did the best job of tamping down arbitration salaries.
Jeff. So just to be very, very blunt about this, Major League Baseball not only turned heel in all of this, they actually awarded themselves a wrestling belt to commemorate that basic fact.
I'm not sure if they Stone Cold Stunnered or People's Elbowed anyone. But yes.
It felt like it sounds like. It felt like the players were, in fact, suplexed.
And here's the thing. Players got radicalized. And when the players got radicalized and the players started feeling themselves, they were able to stand there when Major League Baseball brought in a substandard offer and say unanimously, we are not going to take this, even though we want to play baseball, even though we want to be out there. We don't need to just do this for ourselves, but we need to be like our forebears in the 60s and 70s who built the MLBPA into the most powerful union in the United States.
Well, Jeff, the very dynamic of the players being insulted into unity and therefore they're unanimously saying no to the substandard offer that you just alluded to. Let's get into what that offer was. What did that suggest about what baseball's interests here were?
So let's flash back to the 5 p.m. deadline on Tuesday. It's a night after a 16 and a half hour long negotiating session that ended at I don't even know what hour because I was hopped up on due. And I looked at the offer the next morning and I texted a few players and I texted a few agents. You never have any idea how it's going to work. They were confident. They were hopeful. They just weren't sure. And so the sandwich offer gets countered that morning by the MLBPA. And Major League Baseball comes back that afternoon and hands them an offer that has no movement on the competitive balance tax thresholds and a $5 million increase in the pre-arbitration bonus pool, which is the new mechanism created to help get players paid earlier and more in their careers. A $10 billion industry is on the verge of having games canceled, and its answer was a $5 million bump.
Mm.
And in that moment, Pablo, I got a text from a player. It's very simple. We're hot. They were angry. They were furious. They felt insulted. They felt like they weren't being taken seriously. And if there's one thing to take away from this, to me, trying to compete against the most competitive guys in the world and then telling them that what they're doing is no good is a bad idea. It's a bad idea because it ends up with Rob Manfred with a little smile on his face, canceling opening day. And that image is going to last a very long time, Pablo. That moment is going to last a very long time. When I say this is one of the darkest days, I try not to traffic in hyperbole. And I am hopeful that that will wind up being hyperbolic, that there will be some kind of a path to a deal in the near future, which frankly, there should be. But if this thing lingers on, this is Rob Manfred's legacy. And it is going to be one that has been already tainted by the Houston Astros scandal, that has been laughed at and mocked by fans around the sport. And if you have a work stoppage that you instituted that leads to games lost because you canceled them, I don't know how you recover from that.
So, Jeff, I'm now noticing that it has been a very long time since you blinked, and it sounds like the same is true of these players also.
Oh, Pablo!
So after the break, we'll get into where all of this goes next.
By the way, was it a long time? Like, do I not blink? Dude, I told you. Like, it's a thing. It's a very weird thing.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So, Jeff, just to sort of catch people up on all of this, how long has all of this sort of been going on for, these negotiations in whatever form that you deem them to be basically for real? Like, who's been doing the talking in the room? Like, what does this scene kind of actually look like in real life?
So the main participants in the room on the league side have been Dan Halem, the deputy commissioner, who took over as the league's lead labor lawyer after Rob Manfred ascended to the commissionership, and Dick Monfort, the Colorado Rockies owner, who is head of the league's labor policy committee. On the player side, it is Bruce Meyer, who was hired in 2018 to be the lead negotiator after the disastrous negotiation in 2016. And depending on the day, it could be some other lawyers on the union side, but usually it's a player. And Andrew Miller and Max Scherzer have been the two main ones. Scherzer, of course, being the future Hall of Famer, who signed a contract this offseason that's going to pay him with the New York Mets $43 million a year. And there are plenty of fans who say to themselves, wait a minute. Guy's making $43 million a year, and there's a problem here? What exactly is that? Well, I think Max Scherzer is representative, frankly, of what the Players Association, since Marvin Miller took over in the 1960s, tried to do, which is stretch boundaries, push limits, get salaries as high as possible, and believe that it's going to drag up other salaries with them. They decide to meet up after negotiations are going nowhere in person in Jupiter, Florida at Roger Dean Stadium, the home in spring of the Miami Marlins and the St. Louis Cardinals. And they are planning on sequestering themselves there until they get a deal. There's a lot of, I'm going to give you a funny word here. This became very, very popular on baseball Twitter. There's a lot of caucusing going on. They'll meet up, they'll present an offer, and then the people to whom they present it will take it back to their caucus. And so they are going back and forth, and over the first few days, it's really getting nowhere.
But Jeff, you mentioned caucusing, and I think of the Iowa caucuses, like people voting with their feet, moving to different sides of a room. So just give me the figurative length apart that these sides are at right now. Like, how is it a football field between them? What's the image you would use to visually convey just the distance that they're trying to overcome?
You know how far Uncle Rico said he could throw a football over them mountains? Yeah. I mean, they were mountain ranges apart. And it didn't look like they were going to make any progress, but there's a beautiful thing about human behavior, Pablo, and all of us are subject to it. And journalists certainly, as much as anyone, understand what a deadline can do to you. And Major League Baseball put in a deadline, February 28th, a hard deadline, it said. If it is not met, if we don't have a deal by then, we will be canceling games and players will not be paid. And them was some fighting words, right? And in one day, over those 16 and a half hours, I believe 13 different sessions of meeting, they made some progress. Major League Baseball, though, thought that there was lots of progress, while the union thought there wasn't very much.
But what baseball seemingly is expressing, their take on the players, I'm reading in between the lines here, Jeff, the players feel like baseball thinks that they are just morons, right? Like, that's the thing here. And I actually need you to explain some of this to me as if I, too, am a moron. Because when it comes to something like the CBT, the competitive balance tax, which seems to be such a through line in all of these very fraught negotiations, what does that actually mean for people who need that sort of unpacked step by step?
The easiest way to describe the competitive balance tax is something that was intended to stop runaway spending by the New York Yankees in the early 2000s and morphed into a de facto salary cap. In the early days, the payroll disparity between the Yankees and the rest of Major League Baseball was so profound that not just small market teams, but every team said, how are we supposed to compete against this super team that has more revenue than us and ergo has the ability to go out and buy all the best players on the free agent market? So instead of a salary cap, which baseball fought for in the 94 season and ended up not getting because of the disastrous strike that canceled the World Series, they got the CBT. But what a salary cap, Pablo, also does is it has a bottom end to it. You have to have a minimum as well.
And a floor.
That's right. And because baseball has the CBT but does not have a floor, you get enormous disparity between teams. And you end up in a situation, Pablo, where when you don't have a floor, you have the Pittsburgh Pirates spending $50 million on payroll and the Los Angeles Dodgers spending 5x that. And you end up with an extremely well-paid guy like Max Scherzer making $43 million and a bunch of prospects who are making last year $570,000. This year, the minimum is going to be higher because the union recognized, well, if they're going to place value on young players, we might as well make young players more expensive.
And so if baseball as a whole is sort of in this era of a rigorous data-driven frugality, what is the player's response? How do they frame what they are demanding as it pertains to, like, the sport itself?
They're trying to take the moral perspective, right? And it's difficult, Pablo, to blend money and morality. The two are almost anathema to each other, right?
Yes.
Like, money, the root of all evil, and you want to make that into a morality play?
I'm reminded of all that vow of poverty stuff.
and so you end up in a situation where there's a very, very delicate needle to thread by the players. And the Players Association are so leery and so mistrustful of the league based on what's happened in past negotiations, that they're, I don't think they're playing scared. That's the wrong way to put it. They're just making sure they dot every I, cross every T, and do it three times because they want to make sure that baseball is not slipping one by the goalie.
But even what baseball is doing as to the most fundamental reality of the game seems, in the player's view, to be a wild distortion. And I refer here, of course, to just franchise values and what it means to make money off of the game. Because baseball owners, Jeff, the billionaires who own these teams, by and large, they are claiming what exactly, and how does that claim actually stand up to the scrutiny that a rational observer might apply to it?
Pablo, they're claiming the same thing that they've claimed dating all the way back to the era of Gussie Bush owning the St. Louis Cardinals. And
what an old-sounding name, dear God.
I mean, Anheuser-Busch, like, Gussie. Like, does that not sound like a baseball owner from the 40s and 50s? Gussie Bush.
And, yes.
They're claiming the same thing that they did in the 1970s when they were saying we can't have free agency because it will kill us financially. And they're claiming the same thing that they were in 1994 when they said that we need a salary cap. And they're claiming the same thing that they did in 2001 when they said that we need to contract two teams, including the Minnesota Twins, because they can't make any money. And that claim is that baseball is not a profitable, let alone wildly profitable venture. It's why Rob Manfred has said what he said. It's why officials at the league continue to say what they say, that baseball is a break-even venture, and that the reason that we can't lift the competitive balance tax any higher, we can't do that because our businesses would suffer too much for it. Players noticed. Players saw it. Players started to educate themselves. Here they are with their comrades preaching solidarity and unity. and actually not looking particularly foolish doing so.
No, and they're doing it also because while franchise values have been soaring, player salaries on average have done the opposite, right?
Yeah, four consecutive years now, player salaries have gone down. And granted, like I think it would be wrong to discount what COVID did to the sporting world, especially in 2020. As bad as COVID was, it wasn't around in 2018 when player salaries went down. It wasn't around in 2019 when player salaries went down. If you look at 2018, Pablo, huge gain in revenues. If you look at 2019, the last full year baseball had pre-pandemic, $10.7 billion in revenues. It's a big money sport. And yet, ownership continues to trot out the same old tired arguments you saw in the 60s, in the 70s, in the 80s, 90s, 2000s, and that went away when there was labor peace, but is making a very ugly and unfortunate comeback right now.
So as the players are feeling existential about all of this, as they're feeling like the league, their employers are trying to crush what had been the most powerful example of American labor organizing that this country has ever had, it's also worth noting that there are like pretty existential concerns from the other people who work around the game of baseball. I mean, tell me about the downstream effects, those domino effects, Jeff, not just players, not just owners, but like everyone else who's employed by this sport.
When the sport shuts down, it's not just the players who can't work. It's everyone. It is the vendors at the ballpark. It is the ticket takers at the ballpark. It's the restaurants in the areas around the stadiums. A lot of them make their entire year just on baseball games. Major League Baseball knows that. It knows what a good force it can be in helping drive a local economy. And to so dispassionately just shut down, just say, sorry, couldn't do this, didn't come to a deal, didn't have to shut down right now. That's the reality, Pablo. They didn't have to shut down opening day. And over time, what the owners are going to start missing after about a month or so are local television games. And everybody knows national television rules the roost in the NFL. It's why the NFL is such a behemoth. Local television for Major League Baseball is a big money item, though.
Yes.
And there's usually a number somewhere between 138 and 150 games that you are required to put on for your regional sports network. Tens, 20, you know, up $50 million in some cases. The fact that they're going to have to pay that back does not sit well with clubs. And if there is a pressure point in all of this that's just waiting out there, it is that local television money.
How optimistic are you at this point, right? I think of the two versions of that quote. It is always darkest before the dawn, or to quote John McCain, quoting Chairman Mao, it is always darkest before it goes pitch black. Where are we?
I think the public is pitch black right now. I want to be at dawn. I want to be at dawn because truth is, they're not really that far apart. In terms of economics, they're not far enough apart that opening day should be threatened and the players should be locked out right now. There's multiple simple moves for the league to make to bridge the gap and to get this thing over with. And certainly the union will compromise along with it. But this is a win that the players feel like they need to get. They are the ones who can look at billionaires and not say, I'm afraid of your power, but say instead, I can match it.
Jeff Passan, speaking of power and how much is currently required to operate your eyelids, please, 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 please just go try and get some sleep.
I will be dreaming, Pablo, of a baseball season.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.